Hello, I would like to welcome you to today's TechNet webcast. Microsoft.com Operations introduces real-world debugging without the debugger in IIS and ASP.NET. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to today's host, Chris Apps. Chris, you now have the floor.
Thanks, Eric, and welcome everybody to the last in the series of the Operations introduces real-world debugging. I hope all of you have had the opportunity to visit and listen to our previous webcast. I'm excited about the one that we have today. Just in case you have missed the previous webcast, just make sure that you go out there. These will be on iswebcastseries.com here within about 48 to 72 hours, as well as you can get them at microsoft.com/webcast. If you have any questions regarding what you're seeing in the actual presentation today, or any other presentation for that matter, please feel free to email us at iswcast@microsoft.com, and we'll get the questions answered for you as quickly as we possibly can and get those back out to you. With that said, I do want to say thank you for everyone who has participated this week in this series, and I want to take the opportunity to thank George, who has helped be the ringleader and the organizer for all of these presentations this week. Very much appreciated, and I hope that we can bring you guys back into the series very, very soon again. Without any further ado, I want to make sure to introduce Chris St. Amand, one of my favorite boys over in the Operations Debug group. He's a senior systems engineer at Microsoft Corporation and one of my standbys when I need to know how to do something. Chris is going to talk to us today about Microsoft.com's debugging without the debugger, which is quite an interesting topic in IIS and ASP.NET. He's going to get in one of the more favorite topics that I like to discuss, which is enterprise tracing for Windows. With that said, I'll turn the floor over to Chris, and he can get started. Chris, take it away.
All right, thanks, Chris. Hello, everyone. Let's jump right into this. I love calling debugging without the debugger because ECW has a rich sorts of internal information about IIS that we can expose without having to attach a debugger, which can be troublesome in a lot of cases in production environments. So here's the agenda of what I want to cover. I'm just going to do a brief overview of how ECW works, how it hooks into IIS and what that whole model looks like. I'm also going to cover how to use it, and then we're going to jump into four scenarios. The first one is IIS request-based tracing, which is a really cool feature that IIS has that lets you limit the scope of the URLs that you want to extract data from. And then from there, I'm going to show you an IIS server performance report. And for this, we're actually going to hop onto a production www.microsoft.com server and generate one of these reports. So we can kind of go through what data is in there and what's interesting to look at. There's a lot of interesting information in terms of right down to the level of what pages or what requests were causing problems on your box as far as CPU usage or just different performance pain points. The third one is current executing requests, and this is also a really cool feature of the IIS tracing that will, at any point in time, let you see what requests are executing in your IIS server. And this is something that's always kind of been a challenge as far as when you're having problems. If your server's at 100% CPU and you want to know, what's running on my IIS server. So this really takes away the whole kind of black box from that and really lets you see what's running at any given time. And then from there, the fourth one is some of the new stuff that's coming up in IIS 7, which is really exciting, actually. We're just starting to do some IIS 7 dogfooding on Microsoft.com, and we're starting to see some of the new features. And so for that scenario, I'm actually going to hop onto an IIS 7 box and walk through some of the new tracing functionality that's available for us there. All right, ECW overview, how it works. Basically, the first thing you need to do is configure your ECW logging session. There's several ways you can do this, whether you use logman from the command line or perfmon to create a trace log. So that's kind of the first step of configuring the trace that you're going to set up and using the providers that you need. And I'll actually go over what providers are and how to use them in these traces. But that's the first step. And LogNet interacts directly with the ECW infrastructure in the kernel, which is a very high-performance eventing system. It's performant enough that we can use it in our production environment without any impact. So that's very key here to using this. So LogNet tells the ECW infrastructure, here's the providers I want to use, here's the data I want to gather, and then ECW notifies the IIS worker process and any components that the tracing session is now enabled. So it knows that if a request comes in, it knows what providers and what data it needs to feed back into the ECW infrastructure. So in this case, for this slide, I'm showing the ASP.dll component, but that could also just as easily be the ASP.NET ISAP component or whichever component you're tracing. So in this case, when a request comes into the IIS server, it hits the entry point in IIS, and that's the first event that gets sent back. So as the request is traveling up into the server, and as it travels through the code path in the stack, these events are firing back into the ECW infrastructure, and it's tracking all that information. So in the case of AST, it'll dig in as far, it'll actually go into COM objects as well. So if you have a page that's hanging or because of a COM object, you can actually see that in the trace data. And then also, once the response comes back from the IIS server, you're also tracing back out from the server. So all that data, so you've got the full round trip of requests coming into the server, traveling through all the various components in the stack, and then the response coming back from the server, and that's all getting stuffed into the ECW infrastructure, and which eventually will generate an ETL file for you when you stop that tracing session. So it's a very simple process of start the trace, and then the trace data gets collected, and then you tell it when you want the tracing to stop, and then you end up with this nice, huge ETW trace file. All right, how to use it. I mentioned LogNet. That's what I'm going to be using for my demos. It's a command line utility that ships with the operating system, so Windows Server 2003. You'll find it in the System32 directory. You can also use Perfmon. The Perfmon logs an alert service, which has a UI around configuring trace logs and the providers that you want to use in your trace logs. And then there's also a set of unmanaged APIs. If you're building an application and you want to hook into the tracing in any way, that's also there for you to use. As far as consuming the traces goes, what do you do with this huge ETW log once you have it? There's another utility that ships with the operating system called TraceRPT, and that will take that ETL file for you and convert it into a CSV file, and then you can use whatever parser you want to use, because at that point it's human readable, so you can actually go through and parse it out. The other utility, which I'll also be using, I'll be using both of these as well, but the other one is Log Parser, and that can actually just read the ETL file directly. So if you want to come up with some pretty crafty queries, you can do that using Log Parser to extract the data that you're looking for from that ECW trace file. One of the key pieces of ECW tracing is the providers. These are basically the definitions of what events will be captured in your trace session. So one of the commands you can run on your machine is logman query providers, and that will list out all of the available providers that are on the system that you're looking at. So there's a ton of them. So depending on what information you want to capture, there's an HTTPSYS provider if you want to capture that data. There's several IIS providers, ASP.NET, and there's just a ton of them. There's ranging from, you know, Active Directory, TCP/IP, DNS. So there's a lot of different providers that you can enable to expose a lot of very interesting internal information to the operating system and some of the applications that are running on it. So on this slide here, I kind of have an example of how you would start to stop a trace session. So the first command is logman start, and then you give it a name for your trace log. That's just any random name you want to choose for this particular trace session. Then the dash TF switch is what you'd use to point it to your provider's file. In that file, you can have multiple providers. So you could have the ASP.NET provider, the IIS provider, the HTTP.sys provider. You can all have them all listed out in there with the flags that you want to use to control how much data you want to pull in. And so, and I'll cover the flags in a second here. And then the dash row switch tells it where to dump the data to, and dash ETS just tells it, you know, start the trace immediately. Because you can also use logman to schedule these to happen at different times. And then the second command is just stop the trace log. So basically, you start your trace logs, you do whatever you want to do to catch as far as, you know, if you're having a problem or performance issues, you repo your problem, and then you stop your trace log. The providers.txt file, the format is, there's a GLID, which you can get from running that logman query providers, and then a flag, which I'll cover in a second here, and the verbosity as well, and then the provider name. So I'll go over this in a second here in more detail that covers, you know, what flags are, what the verbosity is, and kind of where you get these provider names. When I hop into a demo here, I'll kind of go over this again too, just to show you. It's pretty straightforward.
Hey Chris, I thought I would add in real quick that the provider file is exactly what you said, to make sure that everybody realizes that is a convenient way to be able to put together multiple providers. But that's not actually required. If you want to, you can just do logman start, the name of the session, and then an individual provider if you're only needing one. So you don't need to use the dash PF switch unless you need to trace multiple providers in this case.
Exactly. There's also a dash P switch that you can use to just pick at a single provider if you want to do that.
Exactly.
So some of these, so an example of the provider is the IIS provider. And here are some of the flags that you could set in that field. Depending on what you want, what kind of data you want in your trace file. So if I just want to capture, let's say, IIS compression-related events in my trace file, I could set that flag to 0x40, and that'll only give me compression-related events. Or I can set it to SE, which will log everything, or a combination of either of these flags, depending on what type of events you're looking to extract from IIS. So maybe you're only troubleshooting an authentication issue or a particular thing, and you want to reduce the size of the trace logs. You can do that by setting that first field, which is the flag. And then also, the second parameter is the verbosity. And so that also allows you to scope the amount of data you're going to get in these log files. Because if you turn everything on with verbosity level 5, these logs can get big pretty quick in the production environment. So, it just gives you some flexibility as far as what kind of information you're getting and whether or not it's failure information or if it's just straight informational events. Okay, so the first area I wanted to jump into and where we're going to do a demo here is to talk about the IIS request-based tracing functionality. This is a really neat feature that IIS has that allows you to scope the set of URLs that you're receiving trace data for. So right in the metadata, there's actually a property called trace URI prefix that you can set. And you can actually set this on the fly, so you don't have to worry about restarting IIS to get this property configured. So you can scope that to start.aspx or a particular path, or So if you only want to receive trace data for an application or a specific URL, you can do that using this mechanism. And that, and that's really nice because it keeps the set of trace data that you get to a minimum. And then on top of that, the second piece of it is that when you configure your flags, there's actually a flag in the IIS, the web server provider that notifies IIS to use that trace URI prefix. So that's part of the flag that you have to set so that it knows that when it's sending its events down to the ETW infrastructure, it knows to only send events to that particular path that you have configured. Okay, so let's hop into a demo of this so I can kind of give you a better idea of how to use this and how you set it up. So I'm just going to go ahead here and hop onto one of our servers. Okay. Okay, so what I'm going to do for this demo is I have an ASPX page in my web root. And in this ASPX page, it's a broken ASPX page. So there's a class in here that we instantiate, and when it runs, it throws a null reference exception because it hasn't been initialized properly. So just a very straightforward failing ASPX page is what I have in here. So the first thing we want to do is set the trace URI prefix parameter in IIS so that we scope our tracing data down to this particular URL that we're interested in collecting data on. So I'm going to use ADSUtil to do that. ADSUtil is just a DB script that ships with IIS. It's in the admin scripts folder. So I'm going to do a get of that property just to make sure, just to show that it's not set right now. And I'm going to go ahead and set that path to the URL I'm going to request, and that's in flash tracing. So I'll just do a wildcard here on flash tracing to show you how you can use the wildcard here. Okay, so that property is set now, and I'll actually go ahead and just do a get on it just to make sure. So there it is, trace URI prefix is set to flash tracing. Flash tracing slash start, and I don't have to restart any IIS or anything. I can go ahead and configure my tracing session now, and IIS will apply that path to the data. Okay. Let me just scope down my command window here, so make sure you guys can all see the commands I'm typing in. Okay. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is configure the providers that I want to use for my tracing session. So I have a text file here that contains the providers I'm going to use for this tracing session. Now, as I mentioned before, you can list the providers that are on your system by doing the login query providers. And that will show you all the providers and the GUIDs that are enabled on your system. So there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. It's definitely interesting to turn some of these on and see what kind of data is in there. But for the purpose of this demo, we'll stick to the ASP.NET and the IIS providers, which I have put together here in this text file. So as you can see, it's the GLID and then the flags that I have set to turn everything on for both providers. And I have verbosity level 5 set, and then just the provider name. So we should basically get all events for IS and ASP.NET when I issue this request. Now, the login command I'm actually going to use to turn everything on, I have squared away in this batch file, and I just like to do this because it's a bit cleaner. You have a start batch file and a stop batch file without having to type in all your switches. So my start batch file. So all that is the logman command. So logman start, that tells us to start the tracing session that I've named istrace. And my dash -tf switch points to the text file that contains the providers that I've configured. The dash -ct switch tells it what granularity of time to use for each W event. In this case, I have it set to perf, which will give us a granularity of down to 10 nanoseconds. So it's very exact as far as when the event's fired. And I have it outputting to an ETL file with the dash -o switch, and then dash -ets tells it to start the trace session immediately. Logman itself is very well documented, so if you just want to do a logman dash question mark, there's examples in there, and it's pretty straightforward. So I'm going to go ahead and start this trace session. Let's mark it back, my batch file here. And that's going to go ahead and tell me information that it's set it up, and that right here I can see as far as it shows me which providers were enabled, which flags I set, and then the verbosity level. So that tracing is running right now. So any requests coming into IIS to that path are going to generate data in my ETL file. So I'm going to go ahead and fire up IE and send a request to that path so that we can generate some data here. And then what we'll do is dig through that data, and I'll show you some of the really cool stuff that's in the data that we can look at as far as how to use it for troubleshooting purposes. So localhost tracing blue.aspx. All right, there's my blown up ASPX page. So now that that's done, all of the ETW events fired because I had it enabled for that path and should be in my ETL file when I stop the trace. So now I'm going to go ahead and stop it with my stop batch file. And that's also a very simple logman stop with the original trace name that I've given it and then the dash -ets switch to tell it to stop immediately. So let's go ahead and stop that trace session. And there it is. I have an IIS.ETL file in here with all of my juicy ETW events. So the first thing we need to do at this point is convert that over to CSV using the trace RPC utility, which, as I mentioned, ships with the OS. So that's right in your system 32 directory. And this is a really simple syntax here. You give it your ETL file, and then you tell it to output it to CSV. So I'm going to do IIS.CSV here. And so that's going to rip through that ETL file and give me a human-readable CSV file. And I'm going to go ahead and crack that open in LogParse just so we can kind of look at some of this juicy data here. So I'm just running a LogParser command. LogParser is available on the download center on Microsoft.com, and it's the Swiss Army knife as far as doing any type of log parsing. So I'm just going to go ahead and use that here, and I'm going to say select star, which is going to give me everything from this CSV file. Okay. So there's several different columns. There's only really a few that you're going to be interested in. The the file name is just, you know, the CSV file that we're parsing. And then the row number is the row number in the CSV. So those really are two interesting. The event name is interesting. This is the event name for the source that we had at that time. And then also the type of event that fired. So these two fields are very interesting. The TID column is just it's the thread ID of where the event fired. So what thread that event fired on. And then the next one is clock time. That's also very interesting. That's the time. It's the number of hits. So, but it's a time-based counter that you can use to determine from event to event how many ticks it took going from event to event. So you can figure out, you know, jumping from the first to the second event, how long did that take? So that's also a very interesting field. And then the last one is really most interesting. It's the user data field, and that contains a lot of information about the event that'll be really interesting here. So you can actually take these. The IIS events are actually very well documented. So if you wanted to, you could take, like, I could take this general request start event and hop onto Microsoft.com, throw that in the search box, and it'll take you to the IIS6 event tracing definitions. And it'll actually tell you what this event means and what all of the properties in the user data field mean, so you can really make sense of that. So I'm going to go ahead with my log parser query here and just kind of reduce the number of fields I'm showing here just to make it easier to step through this. So I want the event name. I want the type of event. And I want the user data. Okay, so that makes it a bit clearer so we can see what's going on. Okay, so the request came in, and the first event that fired was general request start. And looking over at the user data, I can see that my request came in, and it ran in the default app pool. And then from there, it started traveling up through the stack. So we started entering filter modules, filter start. So this one in particular was the ASP.NET filter ISAPI. And then there's some data about that filter pertaining to the specific request that we sent it. So it's really cool because we're essentially walking through each way up through the stack for this request, and it leaves behind these chunks of data that can be interesting for your investigations as far as, you know, what physical path, for example, did the page come from. So I'll keep going through here, but as you can see, it's, you know, at this point we're going into the IIS cache, and it's saying, so URL cache access start, and it's saying, okay, do I have this URL cached or not? So it's very granular as far as the information you can get from IIS. It's definitely a lot better than staring at a status code in your IIS log and saying, okay, what happened to this request? So here we go. We're kind of stepping through the authentication stuff. Auth start, auth succeeded. I can see that my request came in and I authenticated as the anonymous account. Then we keep going, and then all of a sudden I can see we're entering the ASP.NET ISAPI. So here's the start event. And the information that ASP.NET got was that it my GET request for the path that I sent in IE. And then the next couple events, these ones are also interesting, request queued and request dequeued. Now you can, for these ones, what's interesting from a performance standpoint is you could take the timestamp from this data and you could measure how long your request sat in the request queue. So if you're having performance problems and your page is taking a long time to load, this is something you might want to look at to see. It would definitely be a good indicator as to whether or not you're queuing and how long you're spending, your requests are spending in there. So that's kind of an interesting event as far as ASP.NET is concerned. And then we need to get the app domain for this request to run in. And we see an app domain enter event that we ended up getting this nice app domain name. And then some more IS caching stuff. And then eventually we start getting into some managed code. So ASP.NET request start handler. At this point, we're firing up the application for this request. So system.web.http application start. So the application that this request is going to run in is starting. And then we start tracing through the ASP.NET pipeline. So all of the different modules that are in the ASP.NET pipeline are in here. So we traveled through the Windows Authentication module, we traveled through the Forms Authentication module, and all the various authentication modules that are in the ASP.NET pipeline. And then once we get through all of the modules in the pipeline, we enter the parse enter event, and that's telling us that ASP.NET is parsing the page. So as I'm kind of walking through these events, you can imagine how the stack's looking, and it's really neat that we're kind of going through step by step, and we're basically following this request through the system at a very granular level. So after we finished parsing the page, the parse leave event fires, and then we entered into the compile enter event. So then ASP.NET compiled my page. And looking at the compile leave, I can see that it compiled tracing our foo.aspx, and that was successful. So the other thing that's interesting here is as far as the compiler goes too, this is another interesting field where you could use the timestamp data to figure out, you know, how long am I spending parsing my page, or how long am I spending compiling my page? Am I spending a lot of time doing that? So there's a lot of interesting performance data here that you can extract from this as well. So I know that the page compiled okay, well, which is a good sign. And then we start going through some more of the pipeline here. Session state stuff starts loading. So we load system.web.session state. And that begins doing its session stuff. So then we start going down once we get into page pre-init. So I can see that my ASP.NET events are firing here. Page pre-init, page init. So we're coming in and we're running these events. They're firing up and running. And then we actually get into page load. And then after page load, we start running through some more modules here. So session state, some more passport stuff. And eventually until we get down to end handler here. And this is where it gets interesting, because then we see that there's a web event that occurs. Now looking at the data, this is a system.web.management.webRequestError event. So there was some kind of error that happened after we were running through the page load method. So as far as telling you what the error is, the tracing provider isn't quite there as far as, okay, this exception happened. But what it does tell me here is that we went into the event log provider, and there was an error 3005 that happened for this particular request. So knowing that, I can then go into the event log and I'll just start the event viewer here. And there it is. There's my warning. So you can see event code 3005, which is what we saw in the trade session. And this event's actually going to contain some of the juicy details as far as what CLR exception fired. It was a null reference exception in the stack as far as, you know, going into your application and fixing it. So EPW doesn't give you the full smoking gun in terms of where the problem is in the code for ASP.NET, but it does, it allows you to drill into that point where, okay, an error happened here, and then here's what ASP.NET did with that error, so I kind of know where to go and look. And then coming out of that, so back at, once we come back out of the error code, we exit ASP.NET, so you can kind of see everything unwinding, web event deliver end, web event raise end, and then we're back in IIS. And this is also an interesting event, the HTTP SIF cacheable event. Excuse me. This is going to tell us if HTTP SIF cached the request or not. And in this case, the property is false. So it did not cache the response in the HTTP SIF cache, and it tells us why it didn't. And the reason was HTTP status not okay. So, which makes sense, because we don't want to cache errors. And then we exit. So ASP.NET rec end, ITAPI end, general request end. And so that's the end of the request. So we were actually using this log data, we were able to trace from start up into where we failed and then back out. So there's a lot of really interesting data here as far as when you're doing your investigations. That you can extract from IIS and ASP.NET without having to attach a debugger to the process and figure out how to trace through all these structures. The information is just there for you to go through. And with log parser, you can get kind of crafty as far as what data you want to extract and what events you want to look at. Okay, the next kind of area I want to cover is the IIS server workload report. This is an amazing report that you can generate from those ETL files that we created. This gives you a general overview of the performance of your IIS server. And it'll tell you things like the percentage of requests that you're getting to each of the components. It'll give you a CPU breakdown by components, so it'll tell you how much of your CPU time you're spending in ANP, how much CPU time you're spending serving static files. It'll also tell you what your top 10 most requested URLs are. It'll tell you what your slowest URLs are. It'll tell you what URLs are using the most CPU on your server. This one's huge because if you're having performance problems where you're having CPU issues, this will tell you, you know, it'll tell you the top 10 URLs that generated CPU usage. So that you can go into those applications and figure out, you know, why were these particular requests so CPU intense. It'll also give you information about your clients. So it'll tell you which client IP addresses are sending most requests to your box. This might be interesting in maybe attack scenarios or cases where you want to know when particular client IPs might be sending too many requests to your site. It also gives you information about disk IO as far as how much disk throughput each of the IIS worker processes are using. So there's a lot of very interesting information here that's extremely useful during investigations on your server. It's really easy to start a trace session and generate this report on a production machine so you can get an idea of what's going on. It's a very straightforward process. You create the providers. There's five or six providers that you need to enable. So you basically want to turn on all of the IIS providers, the HTTP.sys provider, and the ASP.NET provider. And then you do a trace log, just like we did in the last demo, with the addition of a second trace session. So what we're going to do here is we'll have two trace sessions going simultaneously. The first trace session containing all of our IIS providers that we configured above, and then a second trace session that's going to contain information from the Windows kernel, things like process information, thread information, and disk information. And so we'll launch these trace sessions, generate our ETL files, and then TraceRPT will actually generate this nice viewable report from those two ETL files that will give us all this information. Alright, so with that said, let's just jump right into the demo. And for this demo, I'm actually going to hop onto one of our production www.microsoft.com servers and generate a workload report there. So you can see that I'm actually doing this on a production machine, and we'll take a look and see what's in that report. Alright, let's go ahead and punch in my super secret password here. Okay. So here we go. We are on one of our production web servers. Here's a look at kind of the task manager, running at about 20% CPU with some occasional spikes. We try to leave some capacity on our servers in case of flash crowd events or in the event that we need to fail over a cluster to a different data center. So there's some breathing room on this box, but let's generate one of these ETW workload reports here and see what we can, let's see what's really going on the server. Okay, now, same as before, I have a file containing the providers that I want to enable, an istrace.bib text file. So I've got all the GUIDs for the different providers I want to use. I have full verbosity turned on, and I'm going to collect all the events for all these different providers. And then, same as before, I've got my little batch file that's going to launch Logman. So, except in this case, it's going to start two separate trace sessions. So, we'll actually have two simultaneous trace sessions going, one collecting kernel information into its own kernel ETL log file, and the other collecting IIS trace information into its ETL file. So, in this case, in the first one, which is its logman start inkey kernel logger. That's the name I've given it. And here we're actually using the dash P switch, which is what Chris Adams was referring to earlier, where you can just configure a single trace provider. So in this case, we're using the Windows kernel trace provider, which will give us a lot of information about things that are events that are happening in the kernel that relate to the IIS worker processes, the threads that are running in them, and the disk I/O that those processes are consuming. And then same syntax, we'll dump that into an ETL file. And then on the second line, I've got another logman command that's going to start off my IIS trace session. So let's go ahead and start that. So start log IIS. So that just kicked off my trace sessions. Now, I do have everything turned on for every event for IIS and HTTP.sys and the kernel. So these logs can get pretty big pretty quick, under on a machine that's under stress, like our Microsoft.com servers are. So we'll just run this for a little bit here and let it collect some data about what's going on the server. And then when we're ready, I'm just going to stop the trace session with my stop batch file, which is exact same syntax, logman stop is trace dash ets logman stop nt kernel logger, and that'll stop the trace session. So let's go ahead and do that. Alright, so those tracing sessions are done. And that gives us a couple of ETL files. So in that period of time, you can see the IIS trace file grew up to 118 megabytes. So they can get big pretty quick. But you can also control that using the flags and the verbosity level, depending on what you're doing. In this case, I wanted to turn everything on because I want to generate this workload report. So, the next step is to take these ETL files, and using Trace RPT, there's a couple of switches that we can give it to have it generate a workload report. So, okay, so I've got a workload.bat file here with the syntax. And so what we have is trace-rpt, and we give it the two ETL files. It takes multiple ETL files for syntax, so you can have two or three or four ETL files in here. But for this case, we just want the kernel events and the IIS events so that it'll generate our nice workload report. So trace-rpt is going to go ahead and merge both of those ETL files into our human-readable CSV file. If we want to, afterwards we could go through and look at all those events that are in there. But for the purpose of this workload report demo, the two switches that we're interested in are the dash report switch and the dash summary switch, which will give us a couple of report files. So I'm going to go ahead and run that. To crunch through those ETL files. Okay, and it gave us a CSV file, which contains all of the events, all the raw events, and then a couple of nice little text files here that we can look at. So I'm going to crack open summary.txt. And what this has is just a summary of all of the different event types that fired, disk IO, thread events, process events, bias general events, and the event types, and it just gives us a count, so just a high-level view of how many of the different event types fired. So you can kind of use this too, and if you want to go back and look at some of the raw data, maybe you want to look at some of the system, you know, you want to look at the system config event for the CPU, or you want to look at, you know, maybe you just want to look at these IIS cache events. So you kind of, it's just a rough idea of what's in that raw trace file. But the one we're really interested in here is this workload report. So real easily, we're able to generate this really nice report by firing off our trace session and generating this workload report. Now, the first thing we see is HTTP request response time statistics. Now, this is actually giving us a breakdown of the request rate for each of the components. So, in this case, 22% of the requests during that time period were cache static responses that were actually served out of the http.sys kernel cache. That's a good thing. And then it goes through, and so you can, basically, you can go through and see what percentage of requests are going to your site and what components they're landing in. Then we also have HTTP request CPU time statistics. Very similar, but this is going to tell us where CPU time is being spent, what components we're burning CPU time in on this machine during that transaction. So very, very interesting granular information here about the performance of the IIS machine and what we're spending our time on. Here we go, the top 10 most requested URLs. Reader.dll and our homepage. No surprises there. So it's actually going to give us the request rate even for that particular URL path. It's going to tell us whether or not the response was served out of, I believe this is the kernel cache, and it's going to tell us what the average response time for those URLs is. So in this case, our average response time for the homepage is 4.2 milliseconds, which isn't too shabby. So some other interesting data in here. The top 10 most requested static URLs that we have, the rate, whether or not they're cached. These ones, obviously, the cache hit percentage is a lot higher because they're static files and they're easier to cache. Then we have the 10th lowest URLs. So there's a lot of just really good information in here about what's currently going on in your server. So here we see these ones have higher response times. So there was a user here that it took 3 seconds to get this page. So that's an interesting data point, right? Why did it take 3 seconds to get this page? Was it a slow client? Was there a networking issue? So a lot of interesting information there. Top 10 URLs using the most CPU. Our homepage, one of the top hit components on the site, right? So it gives you the request rate, and then it even tells you, you know, the percentage of the CPU time that that particular request was accountable for. This is really good data. If you're troubleshooting CPU issues on your box, it'll give you that information right down to the application or the request that you need to investigate. And then also requests that are top 10 most bytes sent. So do you have pages that are sending too much data? Is someone downloading huge files off your site? A lot of information here about if your bandwidth's constrained, this is good data as well. And then we kind of go into client information as well. What IP address, top 10 clients with the most requests, who's sending, you know, if someone's sending a bulk load of requests to our site, who is it, who are they, why are they sending us so many requests? So a lot of interesting questions that you can answer here. And then the 10 clients that have the slowest responses. Was there maybe a networking issue that I need to look into? That type of information. And then, in this case, it also goes through and breaks down the top 10 sites with the most requests. If you're hosting multiple IIS sites on the server, which we're not in this case, these servers are dedicated to www.microsoft.com. Just kind of general numbers for that are site-related. This gets a lot more interesting if you're in some kind of shared environment or hosting environment where you have multiple sites and you want to know which sites are the bad ones. And then a bit further down, we get into some more process-specific information. So we can see here that this W3WP process with this PID, and this PID is actually in hex, so what you can do here for this is just, you can take this hex address, throw it in calculator in hex mode, and then flip it over to decimal, and that will give you a representative PID for the worker process that you're looking for. And this is just giving us some general information about the processes. On this box in particular, we're almost 70% in the idle process, so we've got a lot of room and capacity on this machine here. So just some more, you know, all these processes that we're running at the time we ran our trace, some detailed information about them. And then below that, we also have disk counters and disk activity. So I can actually see per disk We have two disks in here on this system. I can see what their read rate was, I can see what their write rate was, and how much data we're pushing through those drives. And not only can I see, you know, what the rate was on the disk, but this ETW report is also going to tell me what each of the IIS worker process, what their rates were. So for this worker process with this PID, I can see that it was doing 1.5 reads a second, pushing 9 kb per read. No writes going on, not a lot of surprises there. But basically, it's very granular disk data, so you can see if, you know, if you have an app pool that's hammering your disks, this will at least point you in the right direction as far as which app pool it is and how much reading or writing it's doing. And that's basically the report. So there's just a lot of really good information in here when you're trying to troubleshoot problems. And it's really quick and painless to generate this report. And definitely something I'd recommend doing if you're doing any type of performance investigation. It's very handy. Okay, the third area I wanted to cover was the number of the IIS current executing request, which will allow us at any given point in time, it'll let us see what requests are running on our IIS server. This is handy if you have queuing going on and you want to know what's causing all the blocking. If you have CPU issues, it'll let you see which requests are currently running on the server that might be contributing to that CPU usage. It really opens up the black box as far as, okay, I'm having performance problems, but what's causing it, right? What's actually running on my IIS server? In the past, you'd have to go in and, you know, you'd have to break in with a debugger and say, okay, I'm going to have to look at all my threads and figure out what's running on each thread. But with ETW, we can now just run you can use this request monitor provider that will dump out a lot of information about the requests that are currently what we call in flight and that are processing data. So there's some really exciting data here about what these requests are doing, what app pool they're running in, their current processing state, and then information around how long have they been in flight. So how long has that request been sitting there running, and not only how long has that request been sitting there running, but when was the last time it changed processing state? So is it stuck doing something, basically? There's actually a utility called isrecmon.exe, which is really nice because you can just run it and it'll give you an XML file with those in-flight requests without having to go through and configure your tracing with LogNAN and do your parsing. Now, isrecmon.exe is actually part of the IIS Diagnostics Toolkit, which you can find on the Microsoft.com Download Center. Definitely a utility I'd recommend adding to your toolkit. So for this, I'm actually going to hop back onto that same production server, and we're going to dump out some of the in-flight requests that are happening on this box, just to show you how easy it is to go through and do this. Okay, so I'm back on the production box here. I'm going to go ahead and close this down. I should also mention, I don't think I mentioned this, but all the batch files and stuff I'm using, we're going to make available on our blog after this talk. So if you're busy jotting some of this stuff down, don't worry. I'll make sure that all of these commands are available to you on our blog that you can grab afterwards. So I'm just going to go ahead and clear the screen here from our previous demo. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do two scenarios. I'm going to walk through generating the tracing data yourself, if you want to parse that using Log Parser, and then the second scenario I'm going to run through is just actually running isrecmon. I'm not going to spend too much time on the first part, which is generating that tracing data manually, because IIS RecMont sits a lot cleaner and gives you a really nice report that you can just use. But I do kind of want to show you how the internals of this works. So the first thing we want to do is I've got my batch file, and all this is going to do is our logman start using the IIS request monitor provider, which specifically tracks in-flight requests in IIS, and we're going to dump that out to our ETL file. So I'm going to go ahead and run that. And then same deal as before with the stop, just to show you what's going on here. It's just a logman stop with my trace session. So I'm going to stop that, and that'll generate our ETL trace file. Now, in the previous demos, I had actually gone ahead and converted the ETL file to CSV to show you how that works, but log parsers will actually parse the ETL file directly, so I'm going to go ahead and do that, and I'm going to go ahead and use log parser and say, give me everything from the IIS ETL file that I just generated, and I'm going to go ahead and tell log parser that this file is an ETW file, so it knows how to parse it properly. And in here, we have a lot of information, and basically each line that has IIS request in progress is where there was an in-flight request at the time I ran my trace session. And then, for this row here, IIS request in progress, I can go over to the user data, and I can see a lot of information about that request. What the URL was, what the client was, what app pool it was running in at the time, the host name, a lot of information. Like I said, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I just wanted to show you how this works. I'm going to hop over and use IIS RecMon, which is a much cleaner way of viewing this data. But I wanted to show you this because in here you can do things like you could generate some log parser queries to look for interesting data if you wanted to. So let's go ahead and run IIS RecMon. Now, how does IIS RecMon work? Well, it's got a very simple syntax. You can actually run it remotely, so it'll take a dash S server switch. If you want to generate one of these request monitor reports remotely, you can feed it a server name, username, password. If you only want to feed data about a particular app pool, you can give it a PID or the app pool ID. So there's a couple of switches here that lets you make your report more granular if you're only interested in a particular worker process. Then there's also a threshold you can set. So this will only show requests that have been running for more than a particular period of time. So if you're only interested in requests that have been sitting there for more than 30 seconds, you could specify this threshold here, and it'll dump out that data. The timeout switch is just how long you want RecMon to run for and capture this information. The dash E switch will give us information about that pool, so just some extra performance information, request information about the particular app pools. So let's just go ahead and run this so I can pull up the report here. So we're just going to do recmon/E, and this will actually spew XML. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pipe that output directly to an XML file that we can open up in IE. So we'll let that run. The default is, the default timeout is 10 seconds. So that's going to run for 10 seconds and capture information about the requests that are in flight on this live Microsoft.com server. Okay, so it generated our report. And I'm going to go ahead and open this guy up in IE. And the way it's broken out, this XML report's broken out per app pool, so I can go ahead and close these down and see what each of our app pools are doing on our server. So you kind of start there and work your way down. So I'm just going ahead and closing these down. So I can predict, I can pick a particular app pool to look at, and I can say, okay, I'm going to go look at our default app pool here. And let me close the web request list here real quick. So the first thing we see is it gives us information about the app pool because we gave it the flash E switch. It tells us how many total requests this app pool has served in its life, the total number of worker threads and available worker threads, and how long this app pool has been running for. Then we can also go into the web request list here. And when I expand that, it's going to give me information about every request that was running at the time I generated that report. So I can see, you know, this client over here was sending a get to flash, and the processing state was send async, which means it was downloading the home page. How long it's been sitting there running for, how long it's been downloading the page for, a lot of information about each individual request. Same thing with other app pools. If I look at downloads, I can see people were in the download center at the time, browsing through the download center. So it's very good for investigations where you might have some kind of ASP.NET queuing going on, or CPU issues, and you just want to know what's running right now, without having to go through and parse the IIS logs to try and make a guess as to what was running and consume CPU time. This will tell you definitively, at a particular point in time, what's running on this IIS server. All right. That's pretty much it for this guy. It's straightforward. So IIS Recmon, if you want to grab that, just head over to the Download Center and search for the IIS Diagnostics Toolkit. It's part of that, and you'll find it in there. Okay. The last thing I want to cover, the last area I want to cover is some of the cool new features that are coming in IIS 7. There's a lot of work going into IIS 7 that makes this exposing this tracing data a lot easier. So you don't have to be in the command line. You don't have to be using Logman or TraceRPT. There's a UI that exposes the tracing data, and that's what the failed request tracing feature is. So you can go right into the IIS manager, and you can set configurable thresholds as far as the path, the response code. So you could say, you know, for this particular path, when I have 500 errors, automatically generate a trace report for that session. And IIS will do that similar to the way it does logging. So you get these nice, clean XML files based on thresholds that you configure through the UI. So you're not having to go through and muck with all these command line stuff and parsing logs. It's going to give you a nice, clean XML file that you can view. This was actually one of the features that's been very helpful for us as we're just starting our dogfooding of IIS 7 on Microsoft.com. We actually have a single production server out there on Microsoft.com running IIS 7 right now, which is well ahead of the release schedule for it. So we like to do that. We like to get in there early and smash up the product and make sure that it'll scale in our environment. Before our customers have to pick it up and use that. So we go through a lot of those early deployment pains to try and hash out some of the bugs. And this is definitely one of the features that's been very helpful for us as far as troubleshooting issues that are happening on the server. So with that said, I'm actually going to hop right over onto one of our IIS servers and show you how to use this and what it looks like. Okay. Let me just get this going here. So what we're looking at here is the new IIS manager in IIS 7. So I have our site selected here, www.microsoft.com. Let me squeeze some of this down here. Now, hopefully this this Longhorn server will cooperate with me for my demo here. But basically, it's a very simple process in the UI. You can turn on for this site. I can go over here in the fail request tracing. And it's really easy to just turn on. So I've got, if it's just a checkbox, you can enable the failed request tracing, where you want it to put the logs, and then the maximum number of log files to store. And this is handy because you can just configure your thresholds and have a rolling number of these failed reports that you can go back and look at in your log store. So this is basically how you turn it on. Very simple UI to go in here and turn this on. And then where it really gets interesting is where I, when I go in and configure my my failed request tracing rules. So I'm going to head down here into the Health and Diagnostics section in the EIS Manager, and I'm going to pull up the failed request tracing section. Okay, now in here, I don't have any rules configured right now, so I'm going to go ahead and configure a rule. And this is going to give me a dialog. So, it's the first thing it's going to ask me is what do I want to trace? Do I want to trace all content, just ASP.NET content? Do I want to trace ASP content, or do I just want to trace a particular URL? So very similar to how we've gone through previously on Windows Server 2000 to configure the tracing, but just exposed to the UI, and it's a lot easier without having to go through and configure metadata properties or use LogMan to generate the tracing. So right here in a nice clean UI, I can just go all content. Then it's going to ask me to the conditions that I want reports to be generated on. So I can say 401, I can say 500, I can put wildcards in here. And you can actually also, one of the other thresholds you configure is the time taken. So you can have IIS generate a failed trace report for you if you have requests that's taking longer than X seconds. So I could say, you know, if I want IIS to give me a report, a tracing report when a request takes longer than 60 seconds or whatever you want to configure. For the purpose of this demo, I'm actually going to go through and repro an access denied error and show you what that trace report looks like. So in this case, I've got my 401 configured here. So IIS should automatically generate a failed trace report for me when that 401 happens. The next thing you do is the providers. So very, like I said, very similar to what we've gone through before with LogMan configuring our providers. And I'm just going to tell it to give me everything here. So very similar. You don't have to deal with flags, though. You don't have to deal with provider flags. All the way through the UI here, you can choose the components you want tracing information for. You can choose your verbosity. It's really nice. So I'm going to go ahead and set that. Now this rule is in effect in IIS. So anytime there's a 500 error or a 401 error, it's automatically going to go and create this really nice XML report that I can just look up and see what happened for that particular request. So you don't have to worry about, you know, configuring your tracing and then reproducing a problem. In IIS 7, you now have configured thresholds that will tell IIS, okay, give me a nice report when this failure happens. So you're not constantly having to worry about, you know, generating these various trace logs and then having to parse them too. So what I've got set up here is I'm going to send a request. I have a URL path set that I've stripped ACLs off of, so it should give me a 401 access denied coming to the box. And I know for me, 401, some troubleshooting authentication issues, in the past has always been very painful. When you're trying to figure out, you know, you're looking at an IE window and you've got one of those authentication pop-ups and you're just like, why is my authentication failing? And all you have in your log is a 401. And maybe a substatus code. So what I'll do here, since I have 401s configured, I'm going to go ahead and send that request to the IIS7 box. This is just a path that I've stripped back a lot of, so it should give me a 401. there it is, server error. And actually, the IIS guys have done an excellent job so far as far as getting the information in the browser when you're hitting localhost. Instead of, you know, some weird IE message in your browser, they're actually putting useful information right in the browser when you're hitting localhost to give you information about why your request failed, similar to the way ASP.NET does it for failed ASP.NET requests. So this is definitely getting a lot better. This is a pretty early build. This is going to be a lot better as far as the information that's in here, and they've done a great job doing that. But for the purpose of this demo, I hit my 401, so I should have generated a FRED report, a failed trace request report, in the directory that I specified. So I'm going to go ahead and take a look in that directory here that I had originally configured for, and there it is. So fr00002.xml. The XSL that's in there is there by default, and that just gives it some styling so that when you open the XML report in your web browser, it looks nice and pretty. But it is just a raw XML file if you wanted to tweak around with the XML and do some kind of different reporting with it. But I'm going to go ahead and pull that up in the browser. And here's all our trace information. So we can see the URL was localhost lacfreb. It ran in the default app pool. Authentication was anonymous. The user was the internet user. And here it gives you a reason why it generated the FREB report. So it was a status code failure, so 401.3, so it matched my 401 rule. And here's how long it took for the request. So right at the top, the FREB report is going to show you where, immediately it's going to show you where there's a warning. And in this case, we failed in the authenticate request method with 401 unauthorized and access is denied. So we know that we received this report because we had access denied. So then the question is why? And going further down into the report, we can see all of the various events that fired, very similar to what we were looking at before on the IIS6 servers with LogParser, but it's a lot cleaner. It's a really nice report, and we have all that information that was available to us before in this nice little XML file. If I scroll down to where the warning happened, it gets really interesting because that's where I want to start, right? That's where the failure happened. So I'm going to scroll down to the warning here, and then just kind of work my way back, right? So here's where we hit the warning. We got our access denied, and then what we can do is just kind of work back. We can step backwards from there into the request path to see what happens. So I can see that the event that fired right before this was the file cache access end. So some interesting things over here. Was the file cache access successful? No, it wasn't. False. Was the file added to the cache? No, it wasn't. False. Error code. Access is denied. Okay, so this is just telling us a bit more about what happened. So let's go back one more. And we can see that in this file cache access part, we were trying to access the HTTP FREB with this username, internet user, and the domain name for that user account. So right here, in these three events, I really do have a smoking gun as far as I'm getting an access denied. Here's the user I was trying to authenticate with. Here's the physical path I was trying to access, and I got an access denied. So if I go and look at the ACLs on that folder, I will actually find that I had stripped the ACLs off, and the internet user is getting access denied. So very detailed report, automatically generated by IIS7. Because I had those thresholds configured. So this is actually a pretty cool feature, and it's going to be very handy for troubleshooting issues. So each one of these also has a timestamp, so you can just kind of, if you wanted to, you could also go through the rest of the events and just kind of see as we're passing through modules, here are some of the IIS7 modules, the exactly filter module, custom logging module, So as we're just passing through all these events, very similar, but it's automatic and it's clean and it's really cool. Okay. So that's pretty much everything I have to kind of go over and show off. So just kind of in summary, on IS6 there is a lot of very rich data available in these case logs. There's plenty of different providers that you can turn on to get data from. This isn't just limited to IIS. Like I said, there's Active Directory stuff, there's kernel stuff, there's networking stuff. So check out those providers. There's a lot of interesting events that you can get from your system, a lot of real internal information that you can get without having to ever figure out how to hook up a debugger to whatever you're trying to look at. The data is just there. It's easy to generate the logs and convert them to CSVs, so you can start parsing through this stuff. A ton of just really valuable data there. The two main utilities that I was using throughout the demos were LogMan and LogParser. LogMan to configure the tracing, and then LogParser to view the data. They're really nice utilities. They're very well documented. Just, you know, run them with a / question mark. Play around with those. There's a lot you can do with them as far as gaining access to this data. And then get to know the providers, right? Try to, you know, take a system, turn them on, see what kind of data is in there that might be interesting for your investigations. There's a lot of very, very rich data. And then also, as far as the request-based tracing goes, you can use that to help scope the data. Because a lot of times when you're playing with this data, you'll see that the logs can get pretty big. So you really do want to try and scope it down, maybe using the request-based tracing functionality, configuring flags and the verbosity. So you kind of want to play with those to figure out the sweet spot to get the data you're looking for. And then use log parsers to comb through those. The workload report, the data that's inside there is just so valuable. If you're doing any type of performance investigation, whether it's disk, CPU, or you just want to find out, you know, information about how much bandwidth clients are generating, just a ton of stuff in there that will help you out, and it's easy to get that report, and it really uncovers a lot of the internals of IIS and the current state of your box in that report view. And then third, there's also the in-flight requests using IIS RecMon. I think the link just went out in the Q&A. Hopefully that's the right one. we'll make sure we get this information up on our blog too, all of the stuff I've run through. But the in-flight requests, that's a huge one. Just, you know, being able to dump out what's running on my IIS server. I know in my past, I've been in cases where you're staring at your IIS box and it's 100% CPU, or you've got queuing going on, and it's like, okay, what's going on here? You know, I can look through my IIS logs and maybe make some guesses at what requests caused it, but this will actually tell you definitively what requests were running at when you ran that command. Very useful for troubleshooting. And then the stuff I demoed in IIS7, the failed request tracing functionality, it's really cool. It's still at a very early stage, so there's probably going to be a lot more to it, and that's coming up. And actually, I think in the next few months, the IIS7 webcast stuff is going to start gearing up here. So if you're interested in that, definitely keep it on your radar, because there's going to be some pretty cool webcasts about IIS7. And with that, that pretty much covers everything I had to go over. I do want to also point out the link to our blog here, blogs.technet.com/mscom. We post a lot of information about, you know, what we do here on the Microsoft.com operations team, a lot of information about some of the scalability things we deal with on our systems, and just general information. And for all the webcasts we've done, we'll get all the information up onto that blog there. So if you want to know what commands we ran or just where to get some of the utilities and stuff, we'll make sure that's all up there for you. Other than that, there's a few slides in here also with some of the other things we've done, some of the webcasts our team's done, the Microsoft Electrical Operations team, some of the different webcasts we've done. We also recently published a few articles in TechNet magazine on our X64 adoption, how we do configuration management on Microsoft.com, and also how we do some of our security denial service baselining. So a few interesting articles there if you're looking for a good read. And we also published some white papers recently on some of the same stuff, how we do server configuration, how we migrated to 64-bit Windows. If you have any questions, I mean, feel free to swing by our blog and we'll try and get back to you too. So I guess with that, I'll just open it up for Q&A here, and if you guys have any additional questions, feel free to fire away.
Okay, I do want to remind everyone, you can visit TechNet at Microsoft.com/TechNet. We've also got a couple of other URLs on the screen here, debugging tools for Windows and IIS diagnostic tools. You can go ahead and check those out. At this time, I do want to remind you, you can submit text questions using that Ask button down there in the bottom portion of your screen. Don't forget to fill out the survey I'm going to be posting up here in just a moment. As a little incentive to fill out the survey, it is very valuable information. So if you really want to know what's working for you, what isn't working for you. But you can tune in to win a 40-gigabyte MP3 WMA player. You attend any live Microsoft webcast through June of 2006 and fill out a survey, and you will be entered in a drawing. 10 players are awarded each month. So with that, I'm going to put up a survey here. I encourage you to fill it out. It enables you to be entered into the drawing. There should be two options, either register online or all other registrants. Please select the one that applies to you. And with that, Chris, it looks like we've got a few questions in the queue. We're running a little bit short on time, but if there's a couple of those you would like to answer verbally to the audience, that'd be great. Thank you.
Great. All right, one of the questions here is, I guess there's still a little bit of confusion on where to get IFREQMON. So I'll go ahead and it looks like it was just posted. Here we go, IFREQMON. Okay, cool. It's an XE that should be inside of an NFI package there. So it's a little bit hidden. We'll try and do a better job of exposing that, and I'll make sure that one's up on the blog as well. That we have a direct link to that tool. Okay, I'm just trying to go through some of the questions here to make sure that people got answers. So one of the questions was, if the GUID corresponds to that particular provider, why do you have to provide both? And so that is in relation to the provider files that I had configured. I'm not 100% sure why you need both, or even if you do need both. For that, I'd recommend running logman-?, and it's logman is very well documented, so it'll show you how to configure those provider files. Just go ahead and check that out. I put both in there because the basically the example syntax that I was using showed that it had both in there. Ideally, hopefully, you don't need to specify both, and you could just use the provider name. That would be good, so that you don't have to mess around with the quiz. Good question. Oh, here's another good question too. You have so many more providers than I do because you configured them with what? And the answer to that question is the providers I had listed were most likely because I was running on Windows Server 2003 SP1. There's a lot more providers available in SP1 than there are that ship with RTM. So the demos I was running through were on X64 SP1 servers. So you definitely want to try and get to that SP1 level. There's a lot more providers and events available in SP1. I didn't mention that, but so that's a great question. Here's another question. How can an ASP.NET application add data to an ETW log? I'm not 100% confident on this for the IS6 scenario. I believe you can hook data into these ETW streams using the trace.write and manage APIs to get trace data into these logs. I know definitely that's going to be a scenario for IS7 for those stub reports that I showed off before. On the IS7 server, there was the failed request tracing reports. And so, definitely in that scenario, using the trace.write, you can push custom data into those logs. And I believe that might be the case also for IS6. That's something we'd have to look into.
I think we have enough time for one more question.
Okay, so there's a question here. Is there a performance impact of running LogNet on remote servers? Is it better to run LogNet on the local machine? The performance impact is mainly going to be around the disk IO of generating the report. So, I guess the answer to that question is really when you generate, wherever your ETL file is going to be generated is where, you're going to want to be concerned about where the log gets generated for performance reasons. So whether or not you configure it remotely isn't a big deal, but it's mainly where that ETL, the event trace file is going to be generated.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time here, but I do want to thank Chris St. Amon for presenting today, and also a special thank you to Chris Adams for being our host. Thank you, everyone, for attending today's webcast. That concludes today's TechNet webcast. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of this conference.